Hey, everyone. Welcome back to High Tea Hoops. This is Brian Boucher at the Duke of Hoops. And today we have a very special guest, two creators in a row. Jesse Chukwu is on the pod. What's up, Jesse? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, we just met in person at the first ever TikTok Creator Basketball Tournament at the GG3X3, which is a lot of fun. You had some pity on the players and you actually commentated instead of actually joining in on the game, which for safety reasons, you weren't able to play. that would have been...
I'm rusty. It would have been all that crazy.
It would have been ugly out there. But I want to start a little bit back on your background because you've been hooping for a long time in the UK. You've been creating for a while. So let's just start at the top. What was it like playing basketball in the UK? We've interviewed like Ashley Hamilton now, you know, Dees Reels, Derek. Everyone seems to start very late. So what actually got you into basketball in the UK to start with?
Okay. So when I was in primary school, originally like football was my thing. I wanted to be a football player. I think maybe even like, do you remember this movie, Bend It Like Beckham?
Oh yeah.
Definitely. Feel like that was out. It was just this time. It was just such a...
That's basically all we knew about football in the States.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, bend like soccer. All right. Bend it like Beckham. Yeah,
exactly. So I wanted to be, like that, I wanted to be a football player, but I hadn't really grown into my body. Like I was kind of just small. Yeah.
Were you always tall?
Yeah, I was always tall. But just very like active also. Mm-hmm. And I didn't make the football team in my school. And my school was small enough that like pretty much if you didn't make the football team, there was no one left like to play with and stuff, because that was pretty much, it was like all the boys were on the football team. And it was me and maybe a couple other guys were just like reading books or something. So naturally I just found basketball. I just started bringing the basketball to school, just dribbling. We didn't even have a hoop at the time. But the next thing I know, like I was dribbling the ball at school like every single day. Next thing I know, magically a hoop appears. And I think now looking back at it, I feel like the teachers probably took pity on me. I was like, need to like add this to the... It's actually a really nice thing. So, but from there, just kind of, I just started to have it in my mind that I'm getting good at this. And then when the football players started to come over to like play basketball with me, I already like been practicing like nonstop. So I'll just use all my tricks on them and stuff. And it was just like becoming really fun for me.
So what's primary school in the UK? What age is that?
What age? Oh gosh. It's up until 10, I think. About 10, 11. So it's like elementary. It's like your elementary school. Yeah.
You started earlier than a lot.
But I wasn't like being trained by anyone. I was I just had a ball and the internet. So it was just, me like kind of seeing some things online and copying that. I think like And One mixtape was big for me, just seeing these skills that the guys were 2000s. Doing. And then I'll just try and copy these things at home, So it was up until I was maybe like 12, 13 that I played for my first team.
And when did you start taking it seriously? You went to Barking Abbey, right? Is that the...
But way before that. So when I left that primary school, I went to a school called St. Aloysius and they had a basketball team. And to me, that was amazing because up until that point, I'd never seen basketball actually being played like as a team sport. I just kind of saw people in the courts outside and stuff like that, but I never really saw it being played. So it was like really impressive to me. Yeah. And there was the PE teacher there, Mr. Kuzik, taught me how to do like a layup and all this. And he saw I had potential and stuff. And then they introduced me to this thing. I forgot exactly what the name was, but it was like the tryouts for the England team, the England development team, the under 15 team. And I went to that, eventually made that without even really having a club team. But the coach of the London, it's actually a whole long story, but I ended up playing for Westminster Warriors alongside that.
Yeah. I just tried out for them this week.
Oh, is it?
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, John Jay went to tryouts. I'm 31-year-old. I'm just trying to get out there and get some exercise. Hopefully I get picked up. But I just tried out for them at Moberly. Oh, sick. It's a great group. It's like Justin, Tosin, great group of guys.
Yeah. I was going to go to that scrimmage, actually. It's on a Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, there's Tuesdays and Fridays there.
Tuesdays, Fridays. Yeah, I need to help.
VC went. We had a bunch of... There were a bunch of BBL players there. Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, nice.
I'm just trying trying to make it up and down the court, man. Just trying to keep those knees going, keep the ankles going.
Honestly, I'm the same way these days.
But you played for the Warriors, and then you made a transition to the States. So you went to Kimball Union, love it, New Hampshire prep school. I went to Dartmouth, so that's like everyone, it seems, like went to a prep school.
In their fifth year. Dartmouth's around the corner from Kimball Union.
Yeah, you're close by. Yeah. So what was really it like transitioning to high school college basketball over in the States?
Oh, it was a lot more different than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be
like the basketball or the culture, both?
Everything. The basketball, I was very prepared for the basketball. Like, I was really, I did feel really prepared for that part. But the culture especially was a lot more different than I thought it was going to be. It was, I thought, you know, they speak English over there. It's going to be fine. But I was really not understood by people as much as I thought I was going to be in that. And that caught me off guard, that people couldn't understand me, or that people were confused by me that I wasn't American.
Yeah.
So it was, it was really different. But once I, you know, I got used to it.
Yeah. One of the, one of your funny call outs is the "you all right?" Cause the number of times I've launched into telling people how I am in the UK, in London, after they've asked me if I'm all right. And then people are like, no, it's just like, what's up? Like, what's up? Like, don't respond. Like, it's just like, what's up, man? And then you're done with it. But yeah, the "you all right" threw me when I first got here.
Yeah.
What, you were 17, 16 when you went over?
15? Yeah, 17, yeah.
Got it. And then you went to Lehigh, where CJ McCollum was a senior. I know you kind of practiced that first year for NCAA madness. Yeah. But what was that like getting exposure to that NBA-type talent and kind of getting exposed? Because Lehigh is a really good basketball school.
Right.
Did they make it to the Sweet 16 that the year before or something?
The year before I went, they beat Duke.
Insane.
So that was sick to see.
So that was a level up for you. What was that like?
It was amazing, especially, you know, seeing CJ on the court. He was, even off the court, like, I always tell, like, the story that when I was seeing him on campus, I'll see him on campus and he'll just be walking with basketball. And I'm thinking, oh, CJ, what are you doing? He's like, oh, no, I have to get as many free throws as I can before my next class. And I was just like, you know, that's just a story to show the type of dedication. As he was really, really hard working, which I didn't see that often. I played against a lot of talented players there, a lot of guys played in the NBA and stuff, but I never seen someone who works as hard as him, but also be as talented as him, which is why I feel like he's good as he is.
Yeah, hearing stories, I was able to play in Seattle with Jordan Hamilton, who was his co-captain, I think the year before, I think 2012, so you came in right after. But CJ, he was still like 6'3 in college, wasn't like the most physically gifted person, right? And just like that work ethic was incredible. And he always talked about that, like very similar, like has to hit this many shots. He was the one who set the tone in the locker room. Yeah. With that type of leadership, were you looking to the NBA? Like with that type of person in the locker room, how did that kind of adjust what your like ceiling you thought you could get to?
Yeah, I think, I don't know how it is with most other players, but I feel like everyone's like goal or dream, you know, to eventually make it there. So seeing him even on my visit and seeing the amount of talent he had was just incredible. Let me just tell another story.
Yeah.
It was a practice. This was before I even came to the school and I was watching him practice and he was on one team and they were playing a scrimmage up to seven or something like this. And he'll be on one team. He'll get them to five or six. And Coach Reed will be like, okay, CJ, you know the deal. He's like, oh man, really? Switch over his jersey to the other team and make them win. And then that other team that he helped in the first place will have to run. I'll be like, yo, this is absolutely insane. And he was scoring style too, you know. Amazing. But anyway, to answer your question, definitely seeing his amount of talent and his work ethic and that he was in talks of NBA talks that people were looking at him like, I think he was leading the country in scoring before he got injured his senior year. So it was just seeing that, it made me feel like, okay, I'm just going to look at everything this guy's doing and try and copy it. But that's a lot harder than it will seem, you know?
Yeah.
Even I remember asking, CJ, like how many shots do you think I should take? How many shots do you take? And I was like, I'm making like 200, 300 threes and stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, like I make, you know, 700. I was like, what? And I remember actually just trying to do that one day. and my arm nearly falling off. I was like, do you know what, mate? Do you know?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Once you see what those guys get to, that level, and what they put into it, you're right. Try to make 700 threes in a day. You get to 300, your arm's too tired to make anymore.
Yeah. It's, and that's mates. Think about how many you have to take. And that's not the only shot. Like, he would make 700 threes, but he'll also take other shots. Yep. It's not the whole, that's not the only thing you practice. This guy, he works. He works, yeah.
And then after Lehigh, you went, played abroad. You played in Greece first, right?
Yeah, I played in Greece 1 year and Spain 2 years and then over to the BBL.
Yeah, so what excited you about, I mean, Greece is obviously an incredible place to play, same with Spain. What excited you about the opportunity to come back and play in the BBL?
Well, it was an interesting situation because I had been struggling with injury in my hip for many years, for a long time. That was just kind of, I never really thought to anything of it. I kind of just played over it because it was okay. And my last year that I was in Spain, it got so bad that I couldn't continue playing. And I saw the hip specialists out there and they were just like, I think you're done. You shouldn't continue playing. Team there.
How old were you? 26.
Yeah, 26.
Damn. It's like hitting your prime.
Yeah. So I came back to London at this point and not thinking I'm not going to continue playing basketball. Started doing my other creative endeavors. You know, I was doing graphic design because I studied graphic design in school. So I started making like album covers to my friends. I was DJing at events and doing all these type of things, just trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. And the Leicester Riders contacted me and was kind of like, you know, let's have a look at, you know, your situation. We got, you know, specialists here that could look at you and we'll look after you if you decide to come in. I was thinking, oh, that'll be good because I was going through the NHS to kind of get things sorted out. So I was thinking, oh, they got access to private healthcare. This might be a good look. So I ended up going with them, signed with them and doing a whole rehab thing. And amazingly, to everyone's surprise, before the season even started, I was ready to play again.
Wow.
You know, I was dunking and everything. I wasn't perfect, but I was there and played that season towards the time where it was like February, March. I started to realize that maybe like I rushed the whole thing, you know, because it's exciting because I thought I was never going to be able to play basketball again. And it's just like, oh man, I could play now. But I wasn't even at that point, I wasn't myself still, but I was excited to be on the court. I was playing off adrenaline. So when it did come to the pandemic time, I was in a lot of pain, you know, like playing through those games. I was taking painkillers to play through the games. Exactly. So yeah. That was at that
good
point.
Good timing for the pandemic then, I guess. Help you with like a forced assessment of everything.
Exactly.
So if people don't know, you had a standout basketball career, but most people probably know you better for your being a creator, for your TikTok, for YouTube. So you have over 3 million TikTok followers now, over 600,000 subs on YouTube. You're across all channels. When did you really start creating? You know, you mentioned you studied graphic design in college. Did you start early in your basketball career or did you really do that in your transition back to London from Spain?
I remember always kind of being this person, you know, like I'm always making home videos and stuff. I used to make prank videos, pranking my sister with my friend, like wearing a mask and skin and like cutting it all up and editing it together. Even through these basketball trips playing for England and stuff, I was always the guy who would come with a video camera and make like a compilation of like what's happening and stuff. So I've always kind of been making videos and creating and stuff, but I never really had the identity of that or like really putting it out there really. I just always felt it was fun. But when the pandemic hit and really there was nothing else to do but play Call of Duty, it was like, it was just something that I thought, oh, let me try this. Let me just like make one of these videos. Cause at that time, TikTok was really like becoming popular, you know? Yeah. And a lot of people say, oh no, just like make one of these TikToks or something like that. And I felt like a little bit like, I'm not sure. But I tried it. And from my first video I made, like seeing, I think it had like 3,000 views or something. But to me, that was amazing. Yeah. Like, wow, 3,000 people that I don't know because at that point, I hadn't told anyone, like, I haven't, like, promoted it on Instagram or anything like that. Yeah. I just made the account. And from the first video, I had 3,000 views. I was like, oh man, I feel like this is fun. And I was making videos on my phone from that point, editing on my phone.
So did you start on TikTok? Was TikTok the first channel you kind of started?
Well, I had YouTube before that, and I would make like little gaming videos. I used to play like World of Warcraft back in the day.
Yeah.
And I made like a little like PvP video, me like fighting other players and stuff, but nothing serious.
But you got to know the channels, how to make the videos, you know, you got into it a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But really, I started like putting a lot of time in it when the TikTok stuff started coming.
I think I remember your first videos because I was like, because I was planning on moving to the UK with my wife like last summer, like right when the pandemic started. And then you popped up. I think there was a video of like you walking the streets of Boston or something. And people were like, whoa, you're British. Like, I didn't know you'd be British. You're like, what are you talking about? There was one with Darian Nelson Henry where like what other tall guys think like see other tall guys. I'm like, this is incredible. Like, it's a British hooper who's like starting to go viral on TikTok right away. So it's pretty incredible to see that. And now, you know, where you are, where you're at with 3 million and, you know, 622,000 subs. Did you take what you learned from TikTok and then start doing those same skits on YouTube? Because they work really well across both platforms.
Yeah. I think even when I started off on TikTok, I always, my imagination was more ahead of what I, it still is, I feel like. It's more, it's more ahead of what I'm actually capable of doing at the moment. and even at that point, TikTok, like a lot of people saying, oh, this is like YouTube quality. Like, you should be on YouTube. Yeah. And I was like, oh,
it's man, a good production value.
Exactly.
TikTok, yeah.
It was too much. In fact, it was taking me way too long to make the TikToks that I felt like I couldn't even like keep up with people.
Yeah.
Cause it's at that time, all the advice was like, you need to be making four or five videos a day.
Yeah, man.
You
know, it's crazy. Like,
man, that's how long it's taking me to edit some of these videos. Yeah, exactly. You know, so, I definitely took the skills that I learned, like producing the TikTok videos and like just apply that to YouTube. But just now I have more freedom to like make it longer and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the YouTube audience, I would say, are more engaging and more, they're more engaging and they're more kind of, I don't know, committed to watching what you have.
Actual creator.
to the subscribers. Whereas, on TikTok, it's kind of like it's a battle to get on the For You page.
Yeah.
But that in itself like taught me a little bit of how to make good content, because there's no you really have to efficiently make your content good from the beginning, because otherwise people are just going to like click away or something. So from the beginning, you have to make sure that you're not wasting any single second.
Yeah, it gets so, you're absolutely right. Like, I have 320,000 TikTok followers, and if I make a bad video,
that's a lot.
I went viral pretty early on, and if you don't make a good video, you'll get 1,000 views. Still, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter the number of followers you have.
Exactly.
And it's brutal, and I think it really messes with creators' minds too.
It really does. It's tough, and I would say since I've been on YouTube, I'll say that would be the difference. I'll say is that you could have expectations on that platform, whereas TikTok is volatile. You could have a video that has 50 million views, you know.
Yep.
You could have something crazy, but you could also, even if you have 10 million followers, just have 1,000. It's like, what's going on? What happened to all my followers?
So for you with like YouTube, did you get a lot of your subscribers from TikTok, or was it just kind of organic? Because you get millions of views on YouTube, you know, on a lot of videos too.
Yeah. No, Mick. So when I remember it was, it's been so tough trying to get people to do anything, let alone follow me from TikTok to YouTube. Because there was one point I was trying to make like cliffhangers in my stuff, like,
to YouTube, see the rest.
And really trying to get anyone to change platform, to change app or something. Most people, they look at it, even if they like you, they're just kind of maybe late or something, and you just keep swiping.
It's tough, man. The transfer is not easy.
It's not. No. And I'm lucky that YouTube decided to introduce YouTube Shorts. Because once they introduce YouTube Shorts, which is basically like TikToks or like Reels, for anyone that doesn't know, I already had a huge back catalog of YouTube quality content.
Yeah,
you know,
in that format.
So, in that format. So it was just like, wow! In a short space of time, it was easy to come out. They released YouTube Shorts. Boom! I still got videos I haven't posted there. You know?
When is that? When did that start? Like, when did you start posting to Shorts? Only like a few months ago, because they've been in beta forever, it seems.
They've been in beta for a long time, and they didn't have like an algorithm that was pushing things. So I posted like 2-3 videos and I was just like, ah, 500 views. Yeah, forget this.
Yeah, yeah.
But recently, and I think it was maybe 2 months ago now, they officially released shorts. And from that
so
time,
it's its own feed on the app now. You can go
Yeah, it's its own feed. Yeah. It's having that crazy algorithm that is also Instagram Reels have, where it's like things could go viral. Yeah. And once I started posting there, it was like a whole new audience. You know, mm-hmm. these most of these people never seen me before these on YouTube. Yeah. So it was so it's been a lot of growth from there. Then being able to kind of just have more time to be like, okay, I'm just gonna make a nice like widescreen cinematic kind of thing that I would have loved to have done on TikTok, you know. But I wouldn't want to commit to something and take the risk that, oh, this only has 1,000 views, you know, even though I spent 5 days editing and planning, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to be on multiple platforms now.
Yeah, I come from the tech world. So if there are any new features that any social media platform launches, immediately start using it, because they, like, all of their goals are to like increase usage of that new thing. And that happened with Reels. Like, they would blow up Reels for you, like, because there's not that many people on it. Same with Shorts. Mm. Like, it seems like that is like from like a product manager's brain at YouTube's like, all right, we got to like put them front and center at Instagram. They're like, all right, Reels is first. Like, that is what we're driving everyone to. And it is a great way to grow. Yeah. Kind of off that topic though, how do you deal with like creative burnout? Because I see a lot, especially Gen Z, like the number one profession they want to get into is being a YouTuber. And there are so many people in this creator community, especially in the basketball community in the UK, I found, who have YouTube channels, trying to grow their different channels. And it can get really frustrating, like we talked about, where you put all this work into a video and you get 100 views. So how have you dealt with like that creator pain, that creator burnout, and like keeping that confidence as you keep building?
Yeah, I think it's tough. I'll say that first, that it's still something that it's not so easy. But what I try to do really is just is keep it fun. I think that really this part is really important, like to make sure that I'm having fun in what I'm doing. Because yeah, like editing could take long and be whatever, but really I have to remember that it's actually, this is fun. It's not like it's not supposed to be like having been an accountant or something, you know, that I'm just sitting doing something that I might not want to do. So that's kind of kept me from burning out. Yeah, kept it fresh, you know, and always kind of stepping outside of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do that. You have such a wide variety of videos too. Like, what is it? Is it Freddy the Fish? Is it Fred the Fish?
Yeah, I'm working on that right now.
You got the Fred the Fish character. You do different characters. Like, you're not pigeonholed into basketball. Do you ever feel pigeonholed into a certain thing? Because it seems like you do have a really wide variety and they all are popular.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I would have thought people would say the opposite, that I'm doing a lot of just British vs American stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, you have your core, you know, you have your pillars, the pillar content that you go off of.
What I try to do is keep a balance of what I feel the audience wants, and mm-hmm. also what keeps things like exciting for me. You know, so even with that, you know, this British vs American topic, I kind of got to a point where I've kind of done all my experiences and all my real stories, and kind of, okay, but people want more. People are like, oh, we want more bottled water. What, like, people, you know? So it's just like, okay, how can I be creative and still keep this fun and fresh and new for me, but also keep the audience happy? And I feel like this is kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, well, you have done such a good job with it. Cause like my first viral videos were like iPhone photo tips. And at a certain point, like, you go viral for certain things. I remember like first video got like 1 million views, one got up to 14 million views. And I'm like, all right, I guess I am just an iPhone photo tip creator now. And you just feel boxed into it.
Oh, trust me. I could really relate to that, especially on TikTok. Like, I didn't start doing this American stuff was more recently. I started off getting viral for walking under a door frame. Because I could walk under it like perfectly. And I was making every second video was a different types video, you know, like different types of this, different types of this. And the spin was that I would walk under the door frame as each character, you know?
Yeah.
Then I started doing loops, and then I was like the CEO of loops, you know? And I was just like making perfect loops. And it just got to a point where it's just like, how many loops can you do? you know? And I remember at that time, there was other CEO of Loops that were doing sick loops. You know, I don't know where these guys are now, but it's just, it is kind of like you have to keep moving. You have to keep moving, you know? And
don't
keep
get stuck, try new things.
Yeah, don't, when you feel that resistance, because the ideas, I feel like the ideas always usually come, but there's always that resistance. Oh, this, people might not like this, or this is new, this is different. Like, I don't know how it's going to go. But for me, like, always kind of pushing through that has kept me growing.
Yeah, I mean, that's, if any creators on earth that are listening, like, that is the biggest takeaway, is you'll hit a wall, keep experimenting, keep having fun with it. Because you're right, if like you keep going viral for walking under a door frame or for an iPhone photo tip, and then you try something else and it doesn't get any views, you get discouraged, you go back to that thing, and you can kind of get stuck. Yeah. And then it's not fun anymore. And then you kind of give up and you're like, all right, I guess I'm either going to do that type of content the rest of my life or move on. So keep experimenting. Like that's a little bit of a tangent, but it's such good advice because it's so hard being a creator and hitting that wall.
Trust.
All right, let's go to this TikTok creator basketball tournament. This is like a personal passion of mine, because I love in the UK that the creator community is so strong. The basketball community is strong, but it's small from what I found. Mm. So these events where GG3X3, so Martin does an incredible job with the GG3X3, got the partnership with TikTok to kind of bring different creators to, you know, from across, you know, it's like influencers in football, in it's like the futsal, the freestyler footballers, like that are really popular. It's like fitness influencers, brought them together, had them play each other in a 3-on-3 tournament to try to do these crossover type promotions of, all right, we're going to bring more exposure to 3-on-3 by bringing footballers in to try it. What got you excited about participating in this type of event, which is like a crossover, a lot of your different interests?
Yeah, I mean, I think exactly that. That is the crossover.
Perfect.
You know,
terrible question.
You said everything I was going to say. That is great. You know, that is just like so many different people from all different walks of life, like kind of just getting together to play basketball, which I love.
And what did you think of the tournament?
I think it was really like well done. It was well put together. Yeah. Like it was great food there, which I really, that was great.
Yeah, the food trucks were amazing.
yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't get to stay for so long, but it was really good. And the commentating was, I thought it was really fun. That was the first time I'd done anything like that. So I would love to do that more, to be honest. It was a lot of fun commentating there.
Yeah, and it was so fun how seriously they all took it. You know, I don't think any of them had any basketball experience.
No, I doubt it.
I think they played to two. Is that it?
Yeah,
like, they played to 2 points and it still took like 10. So they put it all out on the floor. They enjoyed it. They had fun. That was what it was about. It wasn't about being like the best basketball players. No, but that was a lot of fun. And what do you kind of see TikTok doing to promote these different types of events, getting creators more involved in the athletic community? Any insights for us from working with TikTok? Because I know you've gone to some of these creator events. Do you see them wanting to do more of these types of things going forward?
It seems like it. It seems like it. I mean, I don't know why I can say what I can't say. Okay, but I'll say
it seems like, trouble with TikTok.
Yeah, I think it seems like this is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's great to know. let's not get you in trouble or TikTok. Yeah. They're a pretty locked down company. Sorry, TikTok. Let's go to some fun listener questions. So Tom Bonnet, who was at the Surrey Scorchers last season, did an incredible job with their media program. His question is, you and Joe Quinlan from the London Lions, who just retired, I think it's Cyber Nerds, their YouTube channel that they've grown to be pretty big, have done a great job building your future alongside your playing careers. So what advice would you give other players or athletes looking to do the same?
I'll say this, because I feel like at my time playing basketball, I felt, I've always kind of felt to do these type of things, but I felt like I didn't want to because of my identity as a basketball player. I kind of wanted to be taken seriously as a basketball player. Mm-hmm. But my talking to people now about this, like they don't think any different of me, you know? So I would say that advice to anyone, if that's holding you back, because I don't know, it could be anything, but I feel like that's something that could hold people back, like kind of to just be one thing, you know?
Is it like there's pressure? There's pressure that if you're doing that other thing, you're not totally focused on basketball.
Yeah. Like imagine this situation. Imagine if I was making all these TikToks and stuff and I was playing say I was still playing for Leicester Riders, and we lose a game, or we lose three games in a row.
Yeah. And or you play poorly, you know, for some reason.
Yeah, playing poorly. And here's me on social media, hee hee ha ha, a bottle of water. You know, it's when you think about it, it does seem like a little bit, it could be a kind of a tough situation, but I feel like it's not really like that, really. You know, it's kind of like you have a life outside of your sport. You're more than an athlete, I'll say. So that would be the advice.
That's great advice. Yeah, because I think there is this stigma of doing things outside. And this happens in the NFL a lot more, American football, where if like a recruit or anyone in the draft has any outside interest other than football, it's seen as a red flag that they're not committed.
They're not serious. Yeah.
There's like, oh, that quarterback's too smart. He has interests outside of football. Like Aaron Rodgers wants to be the Jeopardy host. Like that's a red flag. He's not focused on football, but you're right. Like everyone's a human. Like you can do things outside of it. That's great advice. Exactly. What do you think British basketball can do to grow in the UK? So you've seen it growing up to playing professionally. It kind of goes alongside the, you know, athletes building their brands and careers outside of hoops. What do you think basketball can do to grow a little bit more?
I think it's I don't think it's the easy question to answer.
This is the hardest question I ask every single guest.
It's tough, and I think, I don't know, I think there's always a lot of discussion with this, you know. I think it's because who's responsible for making things happen?
Let's start with the BBL. How, because it seems like there's a lot of basketball players here and there's a lot of interest in basketball.
Yeah.
What do you think the BBL can do to grow? Because you played in the BBL now. Were you a BBL fan growing up? Like, did you know the teams?
I wasn't.
Yeah. A BBL fan. See, so every single person I ask, it's later that they learn about the teams.
Yeah. I think they could, more could be done to push it to young people and to make it seem cool. Because it didn't seem like that growing up. It didn't seem like, oh, that's a dream. I want to play in the BBL, you know? And even I'll say from my experience, playing in the BBL, when we did go to the schools and stuff, they didn't know who we were. You know, they'll introduce to us and they'll just kind of like, so are you guys like NBA players? Like how much money you guys earn? Like, are you guys rich? You know, it's like there wasn't that. And that's another thing. If there was more money in it, it would seem more of a glamorous thing.
Yeah.
You know, and not that this is the most important thing, but I feel like that's definitely a factor when you're looking at professional athletes and stuff like that. That's part of it, you know, that you're coming to see people that have, it's, you know, they have high value, you know. I think that's part of the whole mystique and stuff. Like, oh, that's Jesse Tuchel. Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, but really, like, I just come.
It makes a big difference.
It does make a big difference. And I don't know, who could be responsible for that, who, whatever, but that would be nice if it was kind of more pushed, like if it's on TV or BBC One at 9, the Leicester Riders against London. It was just, do you know what I mean? It was just like, that would be sick, you know?
Well, we had D's Reels on the pod last time, who I think you got to chat with a little bit at TikTok. So he's this incredible young creator. Basically, he's like, hey, there's overtime in the US. Like, let's get more exposure to, you know, young players. He goes viral all the time for like capturing these, you know, EABL games and like these intense like youth battles. And he's like, people on my TikTok don't care about the BBL. They care about the youth, you know, the youth sports. They care about like the high school level type basketball because they see someone their age, they're growing. And he's like, yeah, BBL should invest totally in the youth sports and like have the London Lions EAB. I know Barking Abbey's a little bit associated with them. It doesn't seem like there is like, I know Riders and Loughborough, but they're not like, oh, you're on the Raiders or you're on like the Rocks junior team and that's going viral. And so you see that, but I keep hearing that over and over again. It's like, it's gotta be the youth exposure.
It's got to be, but I don't feel like there's a lot of funding for it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's I feel like that's a big issue too, where it's just like, you could only do what you could do.
Yep, money seems to be the answer to a lot of problems in the BBL. Let's end with a fun audience question. Melita Emmanuel Carr, friend of the podcast. She's been on, I think she's training in Gloucester now. Yeah. What are your top pet peeves? Because she said you have about 1,000.
Where do I start now? Oh gosh. In like what? In what area of life?
That's all she asked. What are your top? She said, what are his top pet peeves? There are over 1,000. That was the Instagram message.
Oh, she's funny. my top pet peeves. I'll say eating really loudly. I don't like people that like eat with their mouths open and really loud, making a lot of noise.
That's a good one. we can leave it at that. Any other talk from Alita specifically?
That's what comes straight to mind. Right. That's what comes. I don't wanna, like. I think if I get into a rhythm, I might just start listening things off and go. No, I'm joking. I'm not this type. I don't know why she said that.
Yeah, we don't have to do more pet peeves. So what's next for you? You start in the footballers' basketball NBA team. Oh, what are you doing next? I love that series, by the way. I can't wait to watch more of them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm going to release the full episode one on YouTube. I think maybe next week.
Is that Pogba? That was such a good. That was such a good cliffhanger ender.
Yeah, and you know, in that series, I have big plans for that series. Like, if we're talking about what's next, like I'm going to get more into that of bringing basketball into my content, because originally I didn't do basketball content, you know, at all really, which is kind of funny because I'm a basketball player.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's going to be a lot more of that.
Great. Maybe commentate, become a little presenter, do more stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, just a lot more content coming, really.
Yeah. Great to see, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Where can people find you if they don't already know you?
Oh man, find me on YouTube at Chooks, Instagram at J Chuku. Where else am I at? J Chuku. Everywhere else at J Chuku.
Got it. Well, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.